If you're curious to engage with a lot of the topics we explore on the podcast in more creative and embodied ways, we welcome you to join us in Alchemize, our 10-week audio-based program of daily imagination practices intended to disrupt status quo ways of thinking, sensing, relating, and being. To be honest, without any grant support for our show right now, and we did just get turned down by several mainstream environmentalism philanthropies, this program and our Patreon are our primary means of supporting our labor for these free podcasts right now. We really want to remain untethered to corporate interests, and every small contribution to our Patreon or enrollment in our program Alchemize helps to ensure that we can continue producing these vital conversations that feature voices and perspectives often sidelined from mainstream media. So if you value our work and want to dive deeper with us, join us in Alchemize today at greendreamer.com/alchemize and join our Patreon starting at just $3 at patreon.com/greendreamer. Thank you so, so much for however you are able to support our work during these critical times. We are so deeply grateful. Green Dreamer is supported by our listener patrons. To support the show starting at just $1 per month and access extended content, and potentially join our Green Dreamer network as well, you can head to greendreamer.com/support to learn more.
The change within, in each individual, will create that change without. And there's all kinds of awesome people that are working on the change without, and Rewilding is working on the change within. We're all part of one team working together to create this overall change, and I think that can shift the trajectory.
That was Kenton Whitman, the founder of Rewild University, which is a nature immersion school and online platform devoted to helping people reconnect with nature, question cultural paradigms, and discover how nature brings out the best in all of us. Stay tuned as we're about to explore what rewilding is all about, how modern civilization may have dehumanized us and disconnected us from our innate and instinctive human senses, how the endless pursuit of comfort over the pursuit of fulfillment may have been leading us to feeling more empty and being overly consumptive over time, and more. Green Dreamer, if you're ready, take a deep breath and let's dive in. Hey, it's Kamea Shane, and this is Green Dreamer, a podcast exploring our paths to ecological balance, intersectional sustainability, and true abundance and wellness for all. If you haven't already, make sure to hit subscribe, and together, let's learn what it takes to thrive in every sense of the word.
I had a pretty, what people would call, I guess, a good childhood, but my father was in the military, in the medical field, and so we moved around a lot. But my parents always made sure that we were close to someplace nature. We had that access to a forest. So I have all these sparkling memories from my youth of catching and releasing turtles in the local stream and all the neighborhood kids running around and fighting each other with mullein sticks in the woods. So those memories led to, in my teens, starting to read more and be influenced. One of the books, well, My Side of the Mountain, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard of that, but a little boy that went and left his home and lived in a hollow tree. And those books led to, in my late teens, an apprenticeship up at a wilderness school in northern Wisconsin. And it was a very life-changing experience. I basically got to live for 3 months in the woods. His school was just being founded, and so there wasn't a whole lot going on there. So I just got a lot of unstructured nature time, and that just completely altered my life. Then I met Rebecca, my wife, and we both loved nature, but we kind of got sucked into the American dream. And for about 10 years, we were pursuing that. But we kept finding that even when we would, you know, get the big accomplishment, like buying a new house in the country. And it was this huge thing, according to the American dream, but it was lacking something substantial or vital and something that was enshrined in those sparkling memories from my youth. And so Beck and I kind of started on a quest And that quest led us to rewilding. A lot of inspiration, really, honestly, has just been from being out in nature and seeing what that does to us.
So, I mean, do we know how many people, how large is this movement and how many people are doing what you're doing, you know, just trying to live in the wilderness as their day-to-day lives?
So rewilding is really a spectrum kind of a movement. And there's the people on the side of really living ultra, ultra wild. And, you know, I'm on a computer here, so I'm not living full in the wilderness like some people do. On the other end, we have things more the way Rebecca would approach it, is that we really need to make rewilding approachable to everybody. And so we've watched it grow from a pretty radical kind of anarchist movement saying, get rid of all technology and everything that comes with civilization and go back to living in huts in the woods, to something where you see REI now having rewilding movements and creating rewilding projects in big cities. So it's growing, but its growth also makes it difficult to pin it down exactly what it is, because there's so many people using that word and that philosophy without any real strong idea of what that philosophy is. So I think it's forming as a movement right now, and I hope it keeps going in a really positive direction.
Mm. Well, over the centuries and millennia through the evolution of our species as Homo sapiens, I feel like we've further and further removed ourselves from the context of the wilderness, thereby also domesticating ourselves as we've domesticated other species along with us. What are some ways in which this path we've gone down, especially in the past century and last decades, have made us less human than we used to be? And what have been some of the costs of our collective disconnect from our human instincts and human capabilities?
When you ask that question, I think of our direct line of ancestors that all of us have. And these are people that hunted mammoths with stone tools. They lived side by side with animals like saber-tooths and cave bears that dwarfed the modern grizzly. And they did that. They had no smartphones. They had no 911, no antibiotics, firearms, no GPS to tell them where to go. So they must have been pretty amazing people, all of our ancestors, to have navigated that world. When I was out for my 3 months in the woods, I had these changes that happened inside of me, and I started to wonder, is this more how our ancestors looked at the world and interacted with the world? So when we created Rewild University, and now we have our Forest Monk program, where people will come out sometimes up to 11 months and live in the woods, and I've been able to see these changes happen in people. And to me, that kind of shows us what we've lost. So people will come out, let's say, really addicted to video games, certainly addicted to their smartphones. And as they give those things up, their minds become more peaceful and mindful. They move from being stressed out about mosquitoes biting them or not being able to get a fire going to being really, really resilient. And I see people become more fulfilled. And I think that last one is really important because, of course, we live in this culture that is constantly enticing us to seek fulfillment through unfulfilling methods. So we have this constant striving, this constant consumption of stuff to try to give us that feeling of being alive. And because that's never fulfilled, that contributes to the environmental degradation that we see, to the huge waste stream of plastics and all of this goop that we're putting out into the world that comes out of this never-ending desire that we can never quench, that thirst we can never quench.
Right. Well, as you've so eloquently said on your website, currently our culture delivers the message that we are all flawed and that various products will fix our lives. And human rewilding, on the other hand, gives a radically different message. It says, you are physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually amazing. The answer to your problems is available to you within your own innate wisdom. End quote. Why do you think there is such a contrast between this dominant message we get fed all the time in this consumer's culture compared to what I see as the reality, which is that for the most part, we are enough as we are. And often, if we were more in touch with our human instincts and more connected with our minds and bodies, we would know better than any advertisement out there what we really need to heal or be well. How do we come to build this culture almost entirely based on fabricated messages rather than the truth and reality of what is best for us?
Oh, that I wish I knew the secret of how this all started, because it would help us to unravel it. But at some point in our history, we started to divide into social stratifications. And that social stratification said that the people underneath me, I want them to be working for me so that I can be happier. And as we created that world model, we entered into this whole idea of basically victimizing other people in order to fulfill ourselves. I think maybe it was David Katz on your program who was talking about win-win. Could we move to win-win? Mm. And he said, but we're in this win-lose. And that's that paradigm that we have bought into. And now we have created such a megalithic structure around that. Our whole economy revolves around this idea of having that person on top that is going to be the winner and that person on the bottom who is going to suffer, and unknowingly, right? I'm going to eat my Twinkies and feel happy from that, because I think it's good. I can't even feel anymore because we've been so kind of hypnotized into this that I can't even feel what that Twinkie's doing to me. And yet I eat that and my health degrades, my mind degrades, and that person on top is being rewarded for that. And so in a way, I don't even blame the people on top, because we've all co-created this system that rewards that kind of behavior. And that, to me, is what has to change, is co-creating something else together, something that is going to look radically, radically different. For me, the rewilding is a key, because it tackles this at the what I see as the root, which is each individual person. So if I can discern in myself what a food tastes like or feels like inside of me, if I can tell the difference between a nourishing food and a food that's essentially a poison in my body, then I'm going to naturally gravitate towards those foods that are more nourishing. But we've lost that sense. And when I say lost, I don't really mean lost, because it's not buried down there very far. That's what we get to see with the forest monks, is we clear away some of this cultural goop. And as that's cleared away, right underneath there are things like what I call the nourish sense. And that nourish sense is this innate ability for us to put a food into our mouth, sometimes to even look at a food, and to feel whether that's going to be nourishing for us. Mm. So that creates this automatic, it almost becomes reflexive to do these things that we want to see done, to make better food choices, to make different choices about the clothes we wear, to make different social choices. That's, to me, what I love about the rewilding approach, because it's kind of a meta approach, if you will.
Our five senses and human instincts definitely have their own functions, and they really mean things. You know, when we feel these different feelings, when we taste different tastes, that has meaning to it. We just have to, I guess, relearn what those things actually mean, because we have a bunch of junk food and processed foods that are chemically made to make us addicted to them. But if we were to cut all that out and really tune into our taste buds and what it's telling us in terms of how different real foods taste, then we're able to know what's actually better for us.
Exactly. And that's, I don't tell the forest monks necessarily when they come out for our long-term programs, but in a way, they're part of a huge experiment in seeing what happens, because so few of us get that chance to find out what happens when I strip away all of this technology that I'm surrounded with. If I just put myself on a completely whole foods diet and I'm eating massive amounts of foraged food, what does that do? We're not going to get to see, because this culture that you've talked about, you talked about the foods there that are designed specifically to hook us. And so much of our world is like that. Mm. It's designed to entice us on that endless quest. And we become, all of us, basically addicts to this. When people can remove themselves just for a little while, I guess a little while being a few months here, yeah. in this experiment at least, then we get to see, wow, what comes out naturally. And people really do. They won't enjoy sugars anymore. I mean, ice cream no longer draws you in if you are away from it long enough. Video games, it's a prime example where we have a lot of people come out gaming. I don't even know how many hours to be. I want to say like 8-9 hours a day after working. And that's just normal for them. And when they finish the program, they're going to go back to their regular lives. And inevitably, they go back and they taste those things again. So they'll game for a little while. And then they'll report in a couple of weeks later and say, I don't know what I ever saw in these. They're not as yummy as they seem. They aren't as fulfilling as they seem. I thought it was giving me something great, but it really wasn't the whole time. Mm. So it's this discernment, I think, that is often lost because we're just so overwhelmed by all of these enticements designed by some really smart people who are, you know, as you say, very purposefully designing these games, these foods, etc., to hook us.
I guess part of the issue there as well is that the smartest people coming out of our universities and et cetera are also likely seeking the top positions out there in the corporate world that are able to offer the highest pay because they have the most money behind them. And then continually we're getting really smart people into that world of what does it take to get more people hooked to these things?
Yeah, again, it's that economy that we've structured. One of our forest monks, that he still lives in community with us now, he stayed for 11 months in the woods, and he came from Silicon Valley. He had done really well for himself out there, kind of gotten to the top of his game as a video game designer. And he said, wow, what's here for me? And he came here he said, I want to learn to be homeless, basically, to strip down to the bare necessities and really find what's meaningful in life. And he has plenty of stories about the people that are hired to design these video games, and each level designed by, again, as you're saying, these super smart people who have an incredible amount of education behind them. And these video game industries are competing for these people. So that means paying them extremely high wages. The rewards are great to design a game that will hook people at every level so that they just can't help it. There's that chemical release, dopamine release in our brain, just keeps us going. Mm-hmm. And they know the neuroscience, and we're being rewarded for it.
And this is definitely happening across all industries, I feel like, from gaming to food to the fashion industry, everything in this consumer's culture. So I guess we have to also strategize how we can get the smart people on this side to tell people that they're already good enough as they are, and strategize best ways for us to move forward to be able to really get the things that can make us feel fulfilled. But on that similar note, I saw a conversation you had with Garrett. I'm not sure if this was the person you were talking about, but he was also a past student of yours who went through your Forest Monk training program. And in this video, you guys discussed this irony and the idea of how usually most of us will think about surviving in the wilderness as being really hard, but where after experiencing and training to be able to live in the wilderness, that perspective is turned around to becoming that surviving in modern civilization is really hard. Now, obviously, most of us don't have the experience of something like off-the-grid living to compare our day-to-day lives to, and to be able to gain that perspective to look at our lives from the outside in. But if we were to unlearn everything that the modern world has taught us about the way that society functions or should function, like with your lens of where living among the wilderness has become your norm, what about living in our modern civilization would stand out to you as being really challenging that maybe we've just come to accept?
It is trying to keep that discernment, because as we re-enter civilization, then we are sold the idea that comfort is what is good about life, in opposition to the idea that fulfillment is what is going to make life really wonderful for you. And this idea of comfort keeps us always, I don't want to use the word weakened, but maybe I will. It keeps us in this weakened state, especially mentally, where we become more and more unable to resist those comforts. And we forget that the comforts do not equal fulfillment. So if you are outside and you forage your food and you bring it up and you start the fire with two sticks by hand, and there's some pain and some sweat involved, and then you taste that food, those wild greens might have no seasoning or anything on them, but they're going to taste so good, so amazing. That is the fulfillment. When the forest monks come back to civilization, again, inevitably, they get sucked into the domesticated world a little bit for a while. And then they'll say, wow, this pulled me in with that message that comfort is really what is going to make things nice. So the ice cream is going to give me comfort. The sitting on the sofa and watching the movie, it's going to give me this idea of comfort. But we finish that movie and we don't really feel fulfilled, unless it was a really good documentary on something. But we don't feel fulfilled after watching Transformers or something. We feel kind of not so great inside. But the comfort, it's so strong, it's so well designed, that I think that becomes the biggest challenge. And that's why it becomes difficult to survive in civilization. We feel like we are in a good place, but those comforts are just slowly degrading us. So I always sit on that couch in a slouching position. My body gets degraded over time. My bones get weaker. And after so many years, that couch is no longer comfortable. And there's no way I can find comfort. My back is always aching. My joints hurt because I've been eating this food, sitting on this couch, you know, year after year after year. Those promises of comfort do not fulfill. And we need, I think, to really discover fulfillment, because out of fulfillment, we won't be striving. We won't be hungry ghosts that are always reaching, trying to get that next best thing. We're going to see that, oh, it's not a Facebook like that gives me true fulfillment. It's sitting down and talking with somebody face to face. It's not that hungry man dinner. It is cooking a meal with my family or friends and sitting down and eating it together in connection.
So comfort, it sounds like, is really about this illusion of the need to have stuff and to have things, whereas fulfillment is more so about the process of doing things. And I mean, I'm aware of a lot of our social and environmental issues myself, and I try to be conscious with my choices, but I definitely feel that constant seduction of, you know, what I need in order to live comfortably. So I totally get that. And now I'm really curious to experience what it's like to be in the wild.
Oh, Kamea, me too. I feel that seduction. And there are probably very few people that don't. I think that's part of the coming together of it, is realizing that we are all under the influence of this. And we need to come together. We need to empower each other to help each other realize that really we are going to get more fulfillment sometimes from working hard a little bit for something, for striving for something in a positive way, like, wow, I put my heart and soul into this, mm-hmm. rather than just, again, that constant fulfillment of the comforts.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, in conversations to do with sustainability, there's this idea that, you know, sustainable living is elitist and not everyone can afford to buy everything organic or even have access to farmers markets to begin with. And I believe that is the case if we're talking about staying within the structure of modern society where systemic injustice is still very much embedded into that. But practically speaking, what are the financial costs and legalities of living more off the grid, foraging and getting our food directly from the wilderness? And I guess how practical is rewilding as a solution to help people with less financial resources to still be able to live vibrant and healthy lives, liberated from the consumerist culture where money seems to dictate everything?
Oh, that is a beautiful question. And it really needs to be addressed. Because the social inequalities that we currently have present, ironically, make a simpler lifestyle often more difficult. So, okay, with rewilding, there are schools all over the country that teach rewilding, but these tend to be nonprofits or small operations, and they are, you know, doing their best to make their ends meet. So they have to charge something. And if you imagine Rewild University here, I'm just working with 2 to 4 people for months and months at a time. So the tuition looks pretty high. And that just cuts it off from so many people being able to engage in this. Now, we have tried to basically, we have a policy that's a sliding scale policy, even a free policy. And my family, as you know, we live way below our means and just have simplified our lifestyle as much as we can so that we don't need very much. And then last year we had somebody that came absolutely for free for 4 months. And we want to make it available to everybody. But even with that, there is something going on in our social system, because I do not see the diversity out here. The ethnic diversity, the gender diversity, all the diversity I would love to see embracing this is really not there right now. And I am struggling to understand all the forces that co-create that inequality. Mm. I think of when we lived down in Menominee, Wisconsin, before we moved up here into the Northwoods. And we wanted to buy a little piece of land and build a tiny house. And then we discovered that there was a law that you cannot build a house under 1,200 square feet because of resale value. And so to live a simpler life, legally even, is often extremely difficult. There's going to be all kinds of barriers, red tape in the way, that unless you have the money to hire a lawyer and navigate your way through that, you're going to be just paralyzed trying to live a simpler life. Wow. And yeah, it's disheartening to me, because we have a lot of our forest monks that leave here and they want to just live a really simple, simple life. But there are real barriers in place.
So even if people wanted to kind of break free from modern society and this consumer's culture to live more simply, it's hard to do that as well.
It is. We encourage foraging a lot, and we'll hear stories about people that have encounters with the police in a park when they're trying to do some foraging.
Wow.
And it's really frustrating, because it's, you know, these are in general people that are consciously wanting to have less impact. They're consciously really trying to live the best way they can, but they are coming up against things that are really tough to navigate, so much so that often we have to try to be under the radar. And I know people that live in tiny houses, but they've had to basically just do it secretly. Mm. And why does that have to be secret?
Right. I guess a huge part of rewilding is also native wisdom of the bioregions, wherever people are trying to learn to rewild. So, I mean, with urbanization, with, I guess, the marginalization of our native people, how much of this knowledge is lost, you know, knowledge of what foods are forageable or edible within this bioregion? Like, what is left of this right now?
Mm-hmm. It's not a great situation. If the native wisdom was still fully there, it would be amazing. We could benefit from it so much. I have a friend, and he's a white male, and he's been asked by one of the native reservations up here to come and teach nature awareness because they couldn't find somebody within their people to teach it. And that is such a huge loss. On the other hand, I've met native people here who are actively really trying to hold on to those ways and bring them back. And I feel like this is a growing trend. And that's where I've learned, I would say, the most often is just from even small conversations, because that is a, you know, the lineage of their ancestors, they are so much closer temporally to having lived wild that the knowledge is just undiluted. And we have various sources, but really a lot of it is coming back in the sense of people just going back out into nature and starting to experiment again. And so I think that all these skills, this wisdom, a lot of it is, if not self-evident, it's nature-evident. It's stuff that comes out naturally once we're immersed in that environment. So the more people are out there of every background are out there in nature, the more this is going to start to blossom inside of us and unfold. And that's what I'd love to see happening more.
When I tell people that increasingly even research is pointing to the importance of interacting daily with nature, touching the earth and the soil, walking barefoot, cutting out processed foods, and also eating not just whole foods, but foods from biodiverse and healthy ecosystems that kind of biomimic healthy wild ecosystems and so forth, suggesting that we need to learn from native people and people who live within nature. I often get people saying, you know, we can't go back to becoming hunters and gatherers. We can't go backwards. So what do you say to that? And what would rewilding while living within the confines of our modern society and even urban environments look like?
I think we have to see rewilding as a movement forward. So if we're saying it has to go back to living ultra primitively, then rewilding almost, I think, becomes meaningless as a movement because it's going to lose most of its audience right there, because most of us are not going to give up our smartphones. We're not going to give up our cars. We're not going to give up some of the foods we eat. But we can start to have a different relationship with the elements that are already there. And so for me, rewilding changes our inside or brings out this discernment, this inner wisdom, this self-awareness. And then I change my relationship with the existing environment. I have these food choices in front of me. I'm naturally going to choose the one that's most nourishing, which also, not coincidentally, is the one that comes from the most regenerative farming practices. And I'm going to choose that foraged food. When I interact with a smartphone or a cell phone, I'm going to use it to communicate, and I'm going to always err on the side of real life social interaction. And then naturally, I think over time, we can change the trajectory so that what we use our technology for is not for just creating this endless enticement, but that basically uses us. You think about it, our technology uses us rather than us using our technology. But moving towards using our technology and creating our technology consciously so that it is bringing us together, so that it is actually adding more fulfillment to our life rather than just sucking us into the endless emails and the endless texts that stir our brain into a mush. So the change within in each individual will create that change without. And there's all kinds of awesome people that are working on the change without, and Rewilding is working on the change within. We're all part of one team working together to create this overall change. And I think that can shift the trajectory.
That's
beautiful. We just have to be a little patient.
Yeah, very patient. To close, I'd love for you to share your vision of a future where everyone has taken the time and due diligence to rewild themselves. What would that world look like? What would that make possible for each of us as individuals and for the world? And what do we need most to be able to get there?
Oh, okay. We, as a species, develop a level of self-awareness and social connection, that's really important, that will diminish and then eventually, through that trajectory, remove the compulsion to co-create a culture that's built upon breaking our spirits, on using each other. As we create that personal change inside of us, then we're naturally going to co-create a culture that starts to celebrate each person and their uniqueness. And it's going to celebrate the diversity that is part of the human experience and that will constantly remind us of where true fulfillment is. You know, I do think that each of us is going to need to realize also that we are very far from being the insignificant. You mentioned this before, this insignificant nothingness that every ad we watch basically tells us that we're lacking and we're insignificant and unimportant. And to see ourselves as co-creators. And if we're co-creators of this human experience, then our energies are going to change. What we're doing with our lives, how we're connecting and pooling our resources will start to alter. So that was the vision that I would like to see unfold.
And if you were to leave our listener with one to two things that we can walk away with so that we can begin to rewild ourselves, what would they be?
Mindfulness. The self-awareness inside of us starts to naturally blossom as we become more mindful. Meditation is such an amazing tool for that. As we start to develop that mindfulness, we are going to start to make different choices about our technology, different choices about our food, different choices about what it means to interact with another human being. And if I would point people in any direction for a starting place, it would be there. Develop a mindfulness practice, Shinrin Yoku. Get out there and walk through nature. You're going to get all these benefits. Nature to you might be a park because you live in the city, or it might be a plant that you have in your 30th floor apartment that's there on the windowsill, and you watch the little insects come to it. Any of that nature connection is going to help us out. Not all of us have access, so we have to take what we can get, and we have to try to increase access to those who don't have it.
Before we go into our final five, I wanted to take a moment to sincerely thank our listener patrons for helping to make Green Dreamer possible and invite you to join me on Patreon for extended content as well, starting at just $1 per month. With Green Dreamer being an independent media platform, every little contribution helps a lot, and I do really appreciate it. For more information, you can head to greendreamer.com/support to learn more. As I'm starting to publish more videos and field interviews on YouTube, I'd love to invite you to join me there as well by going to greendreamer.com/YouTube. Thank you so much for being here and for your continued dedication to co-creating a better world for us all. For now, on to our final five. Let's power through. What's an uplifting social media account or a publication you follow or a book that you've read that's been really powerful?
Good News Network. Goodnewsnetwork.org. I love going to that. And I'm always seeing these positive news stories that keep us in a state of gratitude. And often they're environmental. They give you hope.
What do you tell yourself to stay positive and inspired?
I'm not trying to suck up here, but I go to Green Dreamer and I look down that list of all those people that are actively trying to do so much good for the world. And then I start to feel like I'm part of a huge team. I don't know most of those people, but I feel like I'm part of a team acting together with them. That keeps me inspired.
Thank you so much. And of course, I'm sure this conversation will be hugely inspirational to our listeners. So we will look forward to learning from you and continually staying inspired by you. But what's one thing you're working on right now for your health?
Always trying to add more foraged food and more meditation, always more meditation.
What's one thing you're working on right now to live more sustainably or to elevate your positive impact on the planet?
My family of four, two girls under 9 years old, we are about to embark on our 100% project. We're moving from Wisconsin to Hawaii. We're going to do a year-long experiment and try to source all of our food from foraging, growing ourselves, fishing, hunting, or sourcing locally within 50 miles, that means for us.
Wow. Super exciting. We'll definitely be following your journey for this. What makes you most hopeful for our planet at the moment?
Oh, let's see. Kids. My daughters, I like to watch them because they're growing up rewilded. And I just see the pure joy of childhood and how fulfillment, there's those shining moments, those sparkling moments, that if we could remember that as adults, we would remember what real fulfillment is. And if we can keep that alive in our children, wow, that could make a generation coming up that could be utterly world-changingly.
Well, thank you so much for this immensely powerful conversation. Definitely so much to think about. Where can we go to continue following you online and learning from your courses?
Our website is rewildu.com. It's rewildu.com. And that has all of our programs and our missions and everything that we're doing.
And what final words of wisdom do you have for us as Green Dreamers?
Really to believe in ourselves. We are up against this huge, huge cultural force, but it's a cultural force we're all co-creating. I would call us to compassion, even to those people that are hurting others, because they are trying to fill the same void that the people in the bottom are trying to fill. And if we can have compassion for everybody and we can come together, we can stop demonizing each other, stop dividing, and begin a process of deep interconnection. And I think that's really what we need, is to come together as a species, say we are facing real challenges and we need real, real solutions.
Green Dreamer, thank you so much for tuning in. To support the show, access extended content, and join our Green Dreamer network, you can head to greendreamer.com/support for more information. To receive weekly solutions-driven news around ecological regeneration and intersectional sustainability, you can sign up to our free Green Dreamer Weekly Digest at greendreamer.com. And if you'd like to come say hey to let me know that you're tuning in, you can find me on Instagram at Green Dreamer Podcast and at Kamea Shane. Finally, as we're wrapping up here, just remember, now more than ever, our planet needs your light to thrive. So if you haven't yet, hit subscribe, and I will catch you later, Green Dreamer.